Welcome to Twisted Tales of Madness and Murder presents Howard. This tale takes place in the early 90s, where we find Howard in his late 40s, with a mismanaged beard and unkempt overgrown hair, lying in bed and staring up at the ceiling, listening to the morning birds outside his window. He slowly turns his head and looks at the digital clock on his nightstand that flashes 9:30 a.m. Howard turns his head back and stares at the ceiling as a phone rings from someplace in the house. He lets out a sigh, then slowly pushes the comforter off, revealing his red boxer briefs and white t-shirt, then swings his legs over the edge of the bed, slapping his feet on the floor as the phone stops ringing. Howard stares at the off-white blinds as the phone starts ringing again. Howard glares back at the bedroom door, then reaches out with his finger and pries the blinds apart, staring out at the sunny morning. Howard opens the door to the bedroom and steps out into the hallway, littered with various piles of dirty clothes. Without paying much mind to the clothing, he casually steps over a pile of jeans as he makes his way down the hall toward the kitchen. Howard walks into the middle of the kitchen. Empty bottles of various alcohols cover the table, as well as the counters along with the empty frozen food containers and dirty silverware. Howard stands, surveying the chaos all around him, then glances over at the answering machine, flashing 9 messages.
Let's see what's so important.
Howard pushes several empty bottles aside, grabbing a half-empty bottle of whiskey, then steps in front of the answering machine. He stares at the flashing number as he unscrews the cap to the whiskey bottle and takes a swig, then hits the play button. Howard smirks when he hears Gary, his supervisor, at work.
Hey, Howard, this is Gary down at the office. Yeah, I was just wondering where you're at. It's 6:30 and you aren't here. So I checked your file. You don't have any sick days or vacation days left. I need to know what's going on. Please, give me a call.
Howard walks over to the kitchen table, pulling out a chair and sitting down, as Amy, Howard's daughter, speaks through the answering machine.
Hey, Dad. It's me. Just checking on you. I realize it's been a couple of years or so since we talked, but I would really like to reconnect with you. When you get a chance, just give me a call.
Howard takes another swig of whiskey and glances over at the answering machine as Gary's voice comes back.
Hey, Howard, it's Gary again. And this is day 2 with no call, no show. I really need to know what's going on. I really don't want to have to write you up, so please give me a call back.
Howard studies the almost empty whiskey bottle as a new voice is heard on the answering machine.
Good afternoon. My name is Matt, and I work for Discover Card. And I've been trying to get in contact with you for some time now pertaining to your delinquent account. Our records show that you are now 4 months past due. To avoid any legal action against you, I strongly suggest you call me back at 1-800-347-2683 as soon as possible.
Howard glares at the answering machine, giving it the finger, but quickly lowers it when his daughter's voice is heard again.
Hey, Dad, it's me again. I haven't heard back from you. Like I said in my other message, I'd really like us to reconnect. I'm sorry I've been so distant all these years. Please just call me.
Howard runs his hand through his beard as Gary is heard again.
Howard? It's Gary again. This is my last call before I need to turn things over to HR. I really don't want to do that. So please, just call me back.
Howard finishes the last of the whiskey in the bottle, then gets up and walks over to the counter and searches through the bottles looking for another one, when another voice is heard.
Hello. My name is Tony, and I work for a courier service, and I'm trying to deliver some important documents to you from a financial institution. I've been around your place and knocked several times, but never get an answer. Can't really tell if you're in there or not. please give me a call back ASAP, 253-941-0199.
Howard finds another bottle with some whiskey still in it and quickly picks it up.
Hello, Howard. This is Chad with your homeowners association. And we couldn't help but notice that your front lawn, well, it's no longer in compliance with our regulations. This is a matter that needs to be addressed ASAP. As the contract, which you signed, strictly states the length it must be maintained at. Now, if you refuse to maintain your lawn, then you will be charged a fee for the maintenance crew to come in and do it for you. If you have any questions, please feel free to stop by the office. Thanks.
Howard finishes the bottle as Tony's voice comes back.
Hey, this is Tony again, and I still haven't heard back from you. I went by your work, and they said they haven't seen you in over a week. If you don't call me back today, I'm going to be forced to turn this over to the local sheriff. You have my number. Good luck.
Howard drops the bottle in the sink and walks out of the kitchen. Howard stops in front of a mirror hanging on the living room wall and stares at himself.
What is wrong with you? Just take a good look at yourself. You've let yourself become a pathetic piece of shit. You're basically just a shell of the man you once were. Not that long ago, you were strong and dominant, and people felt that. Now you walk in here like some kind of limp dick choir boy.
Howard runs his hand through his scraggly beard.
What needs to happen is this. You need to pick your nutsack up off the floor and snap back to being the man you were meant to be. You're not done. You can't be done. Not like this. You will get back on that fucking horse, and you will ride it until it's fucking dead.
Howard slowly nods his head in agreement as he looks down the hall at all the dirty clothes.
I've always had a standard, and this is not it. I need to fix this.
Howard steps into the hallway, then bends down and starts picking up all the clothes and putting them into the washing machine. Howard scans the clean hallway, then closes the lid to the washer and hits the wash button. Howard walks into the kitchen with a plastic bag and grabs the empty bottles and empty frozen dinner boxes and drops them in. Howard stands in front of the bathroom mirror with a pair of electric clippers in his hands, then slowly begins running them over his head, removing his scraggly hair, then repeats the process on his facial hair. Howard, clean-shaven, sits at a table in the spotless and clean kitchen, staring down at a collection of envelopes and paperwork. Several sets of keys lay alongside them. He carefully studies the paperwork and envelopes, ensuring that they are in order. Howard opens the garage door and surveys his overgrown front lawn, then grabs hold of a lawnmower and pulls it out to the grass. He removes the gas cap and looks in the tank when he hears a voice from behind him.
What's up, neighbor?
Howard slowly stands up and turns around, finding James in his late 40s, wearing shorts and a t-shirt and drinking a beer, standing next to a low fence that separates their driveways.
Everything been okay with you?
Howard casually takes several steps toward the fence.
What do you mean?
James motions toward the tall grass.
Well, the fact that your lawn looks like some goddamn jungle for starters.
Howard glances back at the grass, then at James.
Sorry about that. I've been under the weather.
James takes a drink of beer.
Oh, I knew it had to be something like that. Me and some of the other neighbors were talking about how your lawn is always perfect, that you're as anal as they come.
James holds his hands out.
Oh, no offense.
Howard smiles at James.
None taken.
James takes another drink, then looks back at his lawn, which isn't great, then back at Howard.
To be honest with you, I'm okay with it. because then it doesn't make my lawn look like total dog shit. I don't get a phone call from that douchebag, Chad.
James points at his wrist.
I don't know when the last time was you saw that tool bag, but he went and got this big-ass infinity symbol tattooed right on his wrist. What a fucking moron!
Howard motions toward the lawnmower.
I'm gonna go get this all knocked out before it gets too hot out.
Oh, shit! Sorry about that. Don't let me hold you up. Do what you gotta do.
Howard turns and walks toward the mower.
Hey, me and a couple others are gonna hit up this strip club later tonight if you're interested.
Howard glances back at James.
I mean, this place is a total sawdust floor type establishment where the chicks will pick up ping pong balls with their pussies for a buck.
Appreciate the offer, but not my thing. I look at women differently than that.
Howard turns back and grabs the mower as James stares at him.
To each their own. Good luck with the lawn.
James turns and walks into his garage as Howard fires up the mower and proceeds to mow the lawn. Howard, drinking a glass of lemonade and wiping the sweat from his forehead, sits at a small desk in front of a computer in a spare room that has been turned into an office. He places the glass down, then studies the computer screen that already has a collection of words on it before typing a few more.
That should pretty much do it.
Howard leans over and turns a printer that sits on a small stand next to the computer on, then clicks print and watches as his document is printed up. Howard walks into the bathroom, carrying a rolled-up sleeping bag. He pulls the shower curtain back, then unrolls the sleeping bag as he drops it into the bathtub. Howard reaches down and unzips the sleeping bag, then walks out, but comes right back in carrying a shotgun, which he puts in the sleeping bag. Howard looks down at the sleeping bag and shotgun, then takes his shirt and pants off, leaving just his underwear on. He grabs the document from the sink and tapes it to the door, which reads, "If you are not a member of law enforcement or associated with any emergency-related position, please do not open this door and contact 911 immediately." Howard closes the door, then steps into the bathtub, pulling the shower curtain closed before climbing into the sleeping bag and zipping it all the way up, cocooning himself inside it. Howard lays in silence for several seconds before the shotgun goes off. Detective Swanson, in his 40s, pulls up in front of Howard's house and looks out at the collection of emergency vehicles already parked in front.
Oh, this looks like a total goat rodeo. Where the fuck am I supposed to park? God, this is such bullshit.
Swanson, irritated, looks out the back window, then puts the car in reverse and parks it in front of the house next door. Swanson steps into the house, finding several officers and firefighters standing in the hallway near the bathroom. He gives them a quick head nod before Blake, a police officer in his 20s, steps out of the kitchen and quickly makes his way over to Swanson.
Detective Swanson?
Swanson stares at Blake.
Last time I checked.
Blake sticks his hand out, which Swanson apprehensively shakes.
I really appreciate you getting here so fast.
Swanson, irritated, looks around.
What's the deal? I heard over the radio this was nothing more than just a suicide.
Yes, suicide was involved and was the cleanest one I've ever seen.
Swanson stares at Blake, perplexed.
How so?
The guy literally put all his affairs together and laid them all out on the table. Everything you could possibly need to sort a person's life out. Then the guy climbed into the tub inside a sleeping bag and blew his head off.
Swanson stares at Blake, confused.
Fantastic. So why in the hell was I called then? The guy popped his own top, so why would it concern me?
Blake holds his finger up.
That's where this story takes a weird turn. Follow me.
Blake walks back into the kitchen, with Swanson right behind him, and points down at the table.
I was going through and cataloging all the material he had on the table when I came across this envelope.
Blake reaches down and grabs an envelope that has Swanson's name on it, then hands it to him.
What the hell is that?
Blake shrugs his shoulders.
No clue. We were hoping you would be able to shed a little light on things.
Swanson grabs the envelope out of Blake's hand and stares at it.
Nothing like getting a strange envelope with your name on it from some guy you don't know who just punched his own ticket.
Swanson carefully tears the envelope open and pulls out a small piece of paper and reads it.
What the fuck?
What's it say? It
says push play on the answering machine.
Swanson lowers the piece of paper and looks around the kitchen, finding the answering machine sitting on the counter next to the telephone.
You guys mess with that machine at all?
Nobody has touched it.
Guess I get to jump through another hoop.
Swanson steps in front of the machine, looking down at the flashing new message light. Swanson looks back at Blake, then back at the machine as he pushes play.
Detective Swanson, sorry for pulling you away from your current caseload, but I assure you this will be well worth it. You may not know me, but you certainly are about to, as you've been looking for me for quite some time now.
Swanson glances at Blake, then back at the answering machine.
I have been responsible for over 14 homicides, the very homicides that you've been investigating for the better part of 4 years. Also, I have recently altered my pattern. As opposed to leaving the bodies for others to discover, I began the process of taking them with me.
Swanson stares at the answering machine intently.
I realize you must be asking yourself right now, what the fuck am I listening to? That there is no way this person could be the one responsible for all those heinous acts.
Swanson shifts his stance as he keenly stares at the answering machine.
Well, let me tell you something that you should already know because of your profession. There are two sides to every coin, and man is no different. There is a calm and collected side, and then there is an animalistic dark side. The side that wants nothing more than to wreak havoc and cause chaos.
Blake takes a step towards Swanson.
I wish I could say I was in control of the dark side, but it controlled me. It drove me to do things I never thought I would do.
Howard pauses as Swanson and Blake stare at the answering machine.
After my first kill, things got easier from there. It became too easy convincing all those young women to trust me. I'm sure you're still having doubts about the validity of what I'm saying, so let me go ahead and provide you with a little clarification.
Some voices can be heard from down the hall, and Swanson turns to Blake.
Tell them to shut the fuck up!
Blake spins around and walks out of the kitchen.
It all started with Becky. She was my first kill. It hasn't been all that long, so I'm sure you still remember her. She was that long, dark-haired, pretty little thing.
Blake walks back in.
Well, she was pretty until I was done with her. I picked her up in front of that grocery store just outside Yelm.
Swanson runs his hand over his face.
She didn't know what hit her. After I beat her to death, I sat there and stared at her bloody body in shock, not knowing I could become such a monster. I freaked out and just opened the truck door, kicked her body out onto the dirt road, and left.
Swanson stabilizes himself against the counter.
The second one was easier, and I picked her up on Pack Highway. Trina was her name. I know you remember her because she was the one I snapped her neck. And I will say, it's nothing like the movies at all. I also propped her up against that tree like she was taking a little nap.
Blake looks at Swanson.
Is he telling the truth?
Swanson just nods his head yes.
Now I could go on and on and on and tell you all the rest of the names and all the gruesome details pertaining to each one, but I'm pretty sure that now you realize I am who I say I am.
Howard coughs several times as Swanson and Blake stare at the answering machine.
In the backyard, in that small shed, you will find a trunk filled with my victim's personal belongings. Also, if you haven't already, why don't you go ahead and open the blinds. You'll find there are 5 burial plots.
Swanson looks back at the closed blinds covering the back door, then slowly walks over, pushing them open, and spotting the small shed in the corner of the yard, along with 5 burial plots, each with a small white cross.
I assure you those plots don't belong to household pets. Those are my last 5 victims, the 5 women that mysteriously vanished across this great state over last year.
Swanson stares out of the sliding door at the graves.
What the fuck?
I realize this must be very painful for you, knowing that you will never get to see me behind bars. But take some comfort in knowing that my reign of terror is over and that I am most certainly being sent back to hell. I wish I could say that now I'm dead and gone, your troubles will be over. Sorry to say, but that just isn't the case. This world is a shit show, and there are so many people like me. You're merely using your finger to plug a hole in a collapsing dam.
Swanson turns his attention back to the answering machine.
If I was you, I would find a way to police the internet because it will become a weapon to make it easier for people like me to lure and stalk our prey.
Blake shakes his head in disagreement.
The internet? That shit is never gonna catch on. It's just for hobbyists and shit.
My point in all this is that you never really know what your neighbor is doing or capable of. I would wish you good luck, Detective Swanson, but you need more than that if you're gonna deal with this world as it only gets worse.
The answering machine stops as Swanson continues staring at it.
What the hell do we do?
Swanson looks over at Blake.
Pray? That piece of shit is wrong.
Swanson reaches into his pocket and pulls out a pair of plastic gloves, then opens the back door slider and steps out into the backyard. This concludes the Twisted Tale, Howard. Keep those ears open for future episodes of Twisted Tales of Madness and Murder Presents, anywhere you get your podcasts.